You are listening to Social Europe Podcast. We discuss cutting-edge thinking on politics, economy, and employment and labour with some of the most thought-provoking people around, including Nobel Prize winners and other internationally acclaimed experts. So welcome and enjoy the conversation.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Social Europe Podcast. My name is Henning Meyer, Editor-in-Chief of Social Europe. Today we bring you episode 17, which includes a conversation between Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, and Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London, on a topic of diversity, inclusion, and the future of progressive politics. We would like to thank the Centre for American Progress, Canada 2020, and Policy Network for giving us permission to bring this discussion to you as an episode of Social Europe Podcast.
Thank you for being here. When I was preparing for this conversation, and I think Premier Couillard sort of touched on his identity and his history, but I was thinking back, cast your minds back to the 1960s, and my mom moved to Montreal from Guatemala, 1969. Mayor Khan, your parents moved from Pakistan to the UK around the same time, and Prime Minister, your father was starting to reflect on Canada's multiculturalism policy, which would be introduced in 1971. So I think as countries, we've come a really long way. We've got wonderfully diverse nations, but there's some storm clouds out there that we're seeing. Thinking in outside of London, a Polish immigrant who was murdered a few weeks ago, the sort of xenophobic rhetoric that's emerged from the Brexit vote. Mayor, I thought just to start things off, maybe you could tell us a bit about what it's like right now in London, in the UK, and how you're addressing some of the people who would like to roll back the discussion on diversity and inclusion.
Well, thanks, Jennifer. It's a pleasure to be here and to share a stage with you, and also to have this imposter also as well, the Prime Minister of Justin, it's good to be here in Montreal, and it's, you know, for those of us who are progressives, your election victory in October 2015 was an inspiration. And we modelled the good bits of our campaign on your campaign of positivity, on being positive, and that's really important. We remember those things when it comes to the clouds, which are what you're referring to. And let me start by being open about the fact I think London is the greatest city in the world. I say that sitting in Montreal.
I don't know.
Je suis tout à fait en désaccord, comme vous le savez très bien, mais c'est pas grave.
So Justin said, when I start speaking French, I'm being unkind.
Juste à toi, Sadiq, parce que lui, malheureusement, son français n'est pas très bon, alors que si je continue à dire Sadiq ceci et Sadiq cela, il va s'inquiéter, mais...
It was after I told him I don't speak or understand French. But look, I mean, one of the reasons why London is great is we don't simply tolerate difference. We respect it, we embrace it, and that's really important. You tolerate a toothache. I don't want to be tolerated. I want to be respected and embraced. And it's something that, you know, Justin said in one of his recent speeches. I mean, if you look at all the scriptures, it never says tolerate your neighbor. It says love your neighbor. And it's really, really important. So yeah, there are issues. Of course there are. And the Brexit campaign was used as a proxy for grievances people had. So if somebody was unhappy, they couldn't get their child into a local school, they blamed the EU. If somebody had a grievance because they didn't get the healthcare their parents needed, they blamed the EU. And I think, you know, that's the politics of fear. And Justin's campaign in 2015, my mayoral campaign was at the politics of hope. And, you know, I'm proud of the fact that, you know, at a time of, you know, real challenges, when my opponent in the mayoral election had a very negative, divisive campaign, London chose as their mayor, not just an ethnic minority, a racial minority, not just a religious minority, but the religion I am a member of is Islam. And that shows why London is, I say with respect, the greatest city in the world.
But can you...
We chose Denis Kader.
I don't know what that means. I just like, if I don't give a shout out to Denis every time I come to Montreal. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, and for both of you, if we look what's happening in the United States, not just the fallout from Brexit and sort of an inward lookingness throughout Europe, but also the Trump campaign. Can you put the genie back in the bottle after some of the guardrails have come down around how we talk about each other? How do you come back from that?
Well, I think you have to start with a reflection and an honest assessment of the challenges. There are far too many people in our societies who are feeling left out of the success of our economies, marginalized, given disadvantages, excluded, that do not feel that the success, the growth of our economy, the benefits of trade, of globalization, has anything to do with their own success. And they are therefore rightly anxious about their own future, their own jobs, but their kids' future and their grandkids' future. And what you do as a leader when you are faced with anxiety and concerns really defines, I think, the kind of leader you are. I think the example that Sadiq and certainly we were trying to put forward as a model is to know that people are better than some of the negative, divisive politicians think they are, and give people an opportunity to pull together, be optimistic, and face these challenges head on with a sense of being able to solve them together, rather than scapegoat or point fingers or look for easy, reassuring jingos that don't bring you any closer to real growth or real solutions. So the challenge that I think we have in the world right now is really one of how are we going to approach the problems? Are we going to try and actually solve them? Are we going to use them as short-term levers for political gain? And I think not just the electoral success of what Sadiq was able to achieve or what we were able to do here in Canada, but the success of the policies that flow from that approach around inclusive growth, around support for the middle class, around making sure that we're improving understanding within and across neighborhoods and communities, creating opportunities for people to feel not just included and part of communities or society, but relevant to the success of the society they're part of. Full participants in the well-being of our economy. These are the things that we have to focus on if we're going to continue to demonstrate that different perspectives, that multiculturalism, that pluralism, that diversity are a tremendous advantage for any economy, society, country, community, or even company. This is something that we know, but it's something we have to continue to work on.
But other than including different people, newcomers and so on, integrating them more into our society, I think that there's a large number, and I'm talking, Mayor, here about Canada, a large number of people who have concerns. They're concerned about security. They're concerned by what they see as people coming into our country without the same values, different attitudes, especially towards women. We've heard about a father in Ontario who's fighting, he doesn't want his children to take music classes. And I think Premier Couillard is facing a lot of pressure on the whole issue around reasonable accommodation. So other than telling the public that diversity is good, inclusion is good, how do you address those people who are afraid? And I think Deputy Minister Asscher from the Netherlands talked about this, about the Big Mac, that you know there has to be maybe something more than words.
Well, there's nothing new about this. When Italian and Greek immigrants came to settle in my riding of Park Extension, north of the city in the post-World War II years, there was tremendous discrimination. There was tremendous distrust. There has always been challenges to integration of newcomers into a society. And we have successfully demonstrated that the drawing in of people from around the world has been an extraordinary plus, not just to our country and our well-being and our sense of selves, but to our economy and to our success as a nation. And the concerns and fears people have are nothing new. The Kumagata Maru happened well over 100 years ago, and they were the same kinds of fears that end up, you know, being replicated or repeated or drawn on today. And what is necessary is that communities and the world finally learns from the fact that drawing people together is a tremendous benefit to everyone. And that's the message that we need to not just talk about, but demonstrate. Because this country didn't happen by accident, and it won't continue without effort. It takes a deliberate choice to demonstrate the positive power of inclusion, of success, of opportunity for all, in order to allay those fears.
Can I just echo what Justin said? Look, you got a choice. I mean, when people have concerns, you either address them or play on them. And I think the politics of fear is about playing on people's fears and their concerns. And look, I think it's not unreasonable to say to somebody who comes to a country as a new arrival, we've got some basic norms which as a minimum you should respect. We think it's a basic norm that you respect the human rights of others. We think it's a basic norm about gender equality. We think it's a basic norm if you're a public-facing worker, you know, you learn French or English, depending on where you're living. If it's Montreal, clearly French, and English. Whether it's London, it's English. And I think Justin's right, though. Look, integration has been happening for 1,000 years in London. Go back to the Anglo-Saxons. In the last century, at the beginning of the last century, Jewish arrivals. After the Second World War, those from the Caribbean. In the 60s and 70s, those from Pakistan, India, and Bangladesh. Over the last 20 years, from Eastern Europe and North Africa. Now, the reality is the world is a smaller place than it used to be. Yesterday morning, I was in London. Yesterday evening, in Montreal. This evening, in Chicago. Globalization means we're going to have more diversity. The choice is to build walls or to build bridges. And that means talking, it means leading life side by side, it means forming friendships, it means breaking bread, it means wearing the same color tie. All the sorts of things, you two, to show that it sounds a cliche. The reason why cliches are cliches is because they tend to be true, but we've got far more in common than divides us.
Now, sometimes when we talk about diversity and inclusion, some of the values are in conflict with each other. Now, earlier this week, for example, you were at an Ottawa mosque. And at the mosque, women were segregated, I think including visitors. And so there you have inclusion of religion and inclusion of women in conflict with each other. And I wonder how you navigate that. How do you reconcile that?
Well, the first thing to recognize is there is work to do on all these sides everywhere. There is work to do in our parliament to get more women elected. There is work to do in you know, all different religions to do a better job with equality. And the question is, do you engage and participate and share those values and talk about those values, or do you stay away and say, oh, I'm not talking to you until you hit the norm and the perfect ideal that we all aspire to? I think that's wrong. I think what you need to do is open and engage and talk about, as I do regularly when I go to mosques or temples or synagogues or gurdwaras or mandirs or whatever, you know, the importance of equality, the importance of LGBT rights, the importance of our Charter of Rights and Freedoms in Canada, which is not a buffet. You don't get to pick and choose the ones that you like that protect your right to you know, have your traditional dress, while at the same time, you don't want to pick the rights that protect someone else's rights to be different. I mean, these are things that we need to engage with and talk about. And not always just, I mean, for me, that first generation is always going to have challenges integrating. I mean, there are, like I said, in my district in Saint-Michel, there are Italian grandmothers who still pretty much only speak Italian, don't speak much French or English, but their kids and their grandkids are seamlessly and completely integrated into Montreal, and the only difference is that they tend to be trilingual and not just bilingual. And that's, you know, this is understanding that when we think about integration and success, we can't be overly impatient. We need to be respectful and keep a solid pressure and forward movement articulated. But we do have to know that the pressures that particularly the second generation will be faced if you're not thoughtful about it, between having to choose between their identity and their religion and their community and the school that they're part of, there shouldn't be contradictions and conflicts, because we all fundamentally in Canada need to aspire to the same shared values of openness, respect, compassion, willingness to work hard, desire to be there for each other, equality, justice, opportunity. These kinds of things are shared by all of us and need to be.
Okay. Mr. Mayor?
The reason why what Justin said is so important is, if we're not careful, the concern you rightly raise is playing to the narrative of Daesh and so-called ISIS. Let me tell you what I mean. There are people in Daesh and so-called ISIS who say it's incompatible to be a Muslim and to hold Western liberal values. And by the way, there are far-right politicians in the USA, in the UK, and elsewhere saying the same thing. And look, I am the West. Daesh and so-called ISIS hate someone like me, because I've proven it's possible to be a Londoner, it's possible to be a Brit, it's possible to be a European, it's possible to be of Pakistani heritage, of Asian origin, and to be a practicing Muslim. And it's really important that we don't inadvertently help Daesh and so-called ISIS do their job of recruiting our youngsters to join what they're doing. And that's why the shared values that Canada is famous for is so important. And it's really important that, you know, the left recognizes we've got to address this issue. You know, the time of laissez-faire integration is going to happen by itself. Just chillax. Those days are gone. Globalization, the internet, the messages of hate being transmitted into bedrooms means that people like Justin, the Prime Minister of Canada, people like me, the mayor, have responsibility. But we mustn't allow people with concerns to not have those concerns addressed. And it's very different from playing on people's fears or concerns.
Mayor, I just wanted to read something that you recently issued, a joint statement with the mayor of Paris and Hidalgo, and you said, "Together we can act as a powerful counterweight to the lethargy of nation states and to the influence of industrial lobbies. Together we can and will shape the century ahead." So I'm wondering what role that you think specifically that cities play in the whole process of integration, inclusion, celebration of diversity.
Well, Justin, close your ears. This is a power grab from the mayors to prime ministers and presidents, to be frank. I mean, look, if the 19th century was known for the century of empires, the 20th century as the century for nation states, I think the 21st century is about mayors. That's where the action is. I know you love your job, but I love mine too. And why is that? Why is that where the action is? Because that's where people tend to go. That's where you've got this fusion of ethnicity, of faiths, of sexual orientation, of socioeconomic diversity, of all the things that we love about Montreal or Toronto or Vancouver or London or Paris or Berlin. And so we've got to recognize, though, that actually we need to be working together. So, you know, I'm here talking to Justin now. I'm meeting the mayor of Montreal shortly, Dennis, going to meet Rahm Emanuel in Chicago, Bill de Blasio in New York, working closely with Anne Hidalgo. We need progressives to come together and realize that whether it's fighting air quality, saying that I know, you know, you've taken a real interest in relation to climate change, whether it's making sure that we have inclusive growth. You know, this issue about making sure everyone enjoys the fruits of the growth is so important. That means skilling up our youngsters to apply for the jobs being created by globalization, so they don't feel left out. Making sure that when resources are finite, working out a way to allocate finite resources in a way that's fair, so people don't perceive an unfairness and blame the other. And, you know, it means working together. That's one of the reasons why I was keen to come to Montreal, Chicago, and New York, trying not to get involved in the presidential elections, unless I'm asked to do so. But also building bridges.
I won't ask.
So, from the federal perspective, what tools do you see? And I'm going to start off with a little example here. By January, February, March, Syrian refugees who came to Canada a year ago are going to be in the infamous month 13, where their federal help runs out. And I'm talking about government assisted refugees. And then all of that gets downloaded on the provinces. And I won't get into a whole discussion about the fiscal imbalance and all this stuff. But what happens? What tools does the federal government have it? Or do you have a moral responsibility to continue taking care of those people after they've left your care? That's probably not the right word, but you know what I mean.
No, and it's not the right word because the fact is, as soon as the Syrian refugees, but immigrants of all backgrounds arrive in Canada, they are cared for not just by the federal government, but by provincial agencies and by the cities often in which they settle. And that has always been an ongoing partnership. And it's essential because, as we said from the very beginning, if we're going to succeed in not just bringing over Syrian refugees, but in having them become successful Canadian families and contributing to our communities and our growth and our success as a nation, everyone needs to be involved. And that's not just the different orders of government, it's communities and individuals. And that actually has been the inspiring story for so many people about what we did. It was an opportunity to show that this was about Canadians opening up their hearts and their arms and their communities to people who needed a chance to contribute, to grow, to raise their families right. So how we work together, instead of sitting in silos and saying, oh, that's that person's responsibility or that's this level's responsibility, instead understand that we're all serving the same community, the same aspirational goals, is really essential. So when it comes to one of our really important signature issues, which is infrastructure investments, we've said, look, the federal government isn't in the business of deciding where and what transit line you need and what bridge you need to rebuild. We're in the business of listening to the experts, local communities, municipalities, in terms of what is going to best help their citizens, our economies. And being in a respectful frame with how you engage with different orders of government and build on the things that we all know matters is at the heart of what citizens expect from government. So instead of the finger pointings and saying, oh no, you don't talk to me about garbage pickup, I'm federal, you connect them to the concerns that will be addressed by all of us.
Can I just touch on that, Jennifer? I mean, can I just say this as somebody who's sort of 3,000-4,000 miles away and wished my country did as much as your country's doing? Can I just tell you how the actions of Prime Minister Trudeau and Canada are enhancing the reputation of Canada all across the world? You are a beacon of how a civilized G7 country should treat those who are vulnerable and need help. You're showing, you are showing what it means when people say, I'm not going to walk on the other side. You're showing what it means by when people say, I am my brother and sister's keeper. You are walking the walk. And you know, I make this point, if we believe that a society, a country should be judged by how it treats its most vulnerable, a society should be judged in how civilized that is by how it treats the most vulnerable of the world, you're doing a pretty good job.
Now, I think, Mayor, that there's areas of work, a lot of areas of work to do in Canada.
And I'm the first to recognize it, and we're the first to recognize it.
And if I just can continue on the diversity line, you've announced a new process for appointment to the Supreme Court. And I think this has to do with how people see themselves represented in the power structures of our nations. And if you look at the court system, the lower court system, the provinces, 2,100 Superior Court, provincial Superior Court justices in the lower courts, 1% is Aboriginal or Indigenous, and 3% come from racial minorities. And so I wonder, again, and here's another area where there's a natural tension in the system. If you're going to have a more diverse court system, and not just one sector of our society, but one that's very important, is our, for example, official languages policy doing damage to the effort to get more people from racial minorities, more women into these positions?
I think we're the first to admit there's an awful lot of work to do, not just in our court system, but across the level of appointments in government and by government, but the representation of minorities or even of women on boards in Canada is way under where it needs to be. And it's not just a moral issue. It's not just, oh yes, we need to be nice and inclusive in our approach. It's that we know that organizations that have better representation by women, more diversity in their makeup, actually make better decisions, make better judgments. And they're more reflective of the communities and the society that they are charged with serving. And it means a lot for people to be able to see in their leadership levels themselves reflected in their values, but also in their identities. So this is a really important priority for us. But as you point out, it's not something we can suddenly do overnight. There is an awful lot of work to do in the lower courts to be able to get the diversity up, to be able to get more women to the bench, to be able to move along. And what we're going to do with this new Supreme Court process is choose the absolute best possible Supreme Court justice to serve Canadians. And keep in mind that we want to make sure that we are representing as many Canadians with that court as we possibly can.
Now, you raised the subject of women on boards. It's something that a lot of us care about, and women in leadership positions. And there's some very terrible statistics that came out actually this week about the percentages in Canada. But Mayor, what role do you think that the private sector has? And that's just one component, the women and their representation, but also I'm not sure about the statistics in the UK, but in Canada, there's a disparity between the incomes of newcomers and the incomes of people who have been living here for a long time, which suggests that there's something wrong at the employment point of the continuum. So what do you think that the private sector should be doing?
Sure. I mean, just to give you an example, how when Canada does something, people notice and respond. When Justin became prime minister and decided that half of his cabinet should be women, because it's 2015. When I won my mayoralty in 2016 and was appointing deputy mayors, more than half my deputy mayors are women, because it's 2016. And Justin's right. It's not simply altruism. There is an economic and business case about making sure everyone's talent is recognized and fulfilled. And fulfilling potential is important. In London, I published for the first time ever, the first mayor ever to publish a gender pay audit. And London's better than the rest of the country, and City Hall's better than London, but it's still 5%. On November the 11th this year, November the 11th, is the day when, if you work out from November the 11th until December 31st, women are basically working for free in my country because women earn less than men. Now, I've got two daughters. How is it right that if my children had been born boys, their life chances would be far more superior than the fact that they're born girls? That cannot be right in the fourth richest city in the world in 2016. That's why it's important as parents for Justin and me, but it's also, it can't just be a women's issue. It can't just be a public sector issue, because if it's right that the public sector is not recognizing talent in recruitment, retention, promotion, and all the other things, then imagine the private sector. And you know the good thing? The private sector gets it. When you speak to chief executives, they get it. They're not recognizing talent. They're not fulfilling the potential of talent. They're not seeing the career progression. Look, you either believe that women should have children and return to work, or you don't. Right? And if you do, you've got to make sure you've got decent maternity rights. You either believe men should have a role in raising a child, or you don't. If you do, decent paternity rights. And it's important, for those of us on the left, firstly, to win elections, because you can only improve people's lives by winning elections, but recognizing that the private sector is not our enemy. They see the benefits of equality. I mean, it's something that I remember Justin said recently. I sound like a real fanboy reading all of Justin's speeches and stuff. It's a bit embarrassing, Justin. But you know, gender equality is a strength, not a weakness. And I think he's absolutely right.
We have a few more minutes, so I know I'm not going to get an answer out of the Prime Minister, a good one on this, but you're going
Ouch.
To hear about... I listen to a
I
lot of
I look forward to working with whomever the American people choose as their president. Doesn't even have to ask the question anymore.
Who believes him when he said that?
Well, now, he guessed what I was going to ask. So you're about to head into the United States. What is the view from London of the Trump campaign? And I mean, it's discussion of that campaign is all we're hearing about here in Canada. When I was in Europe this summer, everyone was talking about it there as well. I'm just interested in what you think about it and what's going to be the impact, I guess, if Mr. Trump wins.
Well, can I scotch the rumors that the reason why I came to I'm going to America before January is in case Trump wins and I'm stopped from coming. But I mean, Donald Trump said that, you know, Muslims from around the world, I'm paraphrasing, would not be welcome to the United States of America. And not only does that show a lack of understanding and awareness of the great country that is the USA and its history and its legacy, but it's also inadvertently playing into the narrative of Daesh and so-called ISIS. Because it's implying it's not possible to be a Western liberal and to be a mainstream Muslim. And then when I won the election in London, he said he'd make an exception for me. And the point I made to Donald Trump through the medium of the media is, you know, there's nothing exceptional about me. There are literally tens and thousands of Muslims around the world who love America, would want to go there to study, to work, to visit their family, many Americans of Islamic faith. And, you know, I think it's important that, you know, USA maintains her role as a beacon for tolerance, respect, and diversity. So look, I think it's important for those of us who are foreigners to stay out of the US elections, hope the best candidate wins, and I hope she does win with a stomping majority.
Any comment on that? Come on, go for it. No. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And just bear with us. The Secretary of State is going to be here shortly. And thank you very much for being with us. Thank you so much for the interesting discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you don't miss future episodes by subscribing to Social Europe Podcast. You can also read our articles on www.socialeurope.eu and follow us on Facebook and on Twitter @Social Europe. Until next time.